Hello everyone, and thank you for tuning in into this episode of The Last Set. Today I had a very special guest joining me on the podcast. He is ranked within the WC Top 40 boxers. He was 2019 Mandra's Athlete of the Year. He's been in the fight game for almost a decade, and he has won numerous state and national titles, as well as earned his golden gloves. He has a phenomenal professional record, and today we had a really good conversation about his history with boxing and his upcoming fight at Thunderdome on February 26th. Please give it up for the one and only Action Jackson England. Now, buddy, I've known you for a good few years now, I would say, and I'm not gonna lie, we've had a few guests on the podcast so far, and then my mate Jack was just like, yo, we need to have like a professional boxer now on the podcast. We've had MMA, we've had nutritionists. And I was like, I know someone. So Jackson, without further ado, man, you are the first official professional boxer on the Last Set podcast. Thanks for coming on, buddy. Now, man, right off the bat, one thing I was always actually meaning to ask you is in combat sports, everyone's got a nickname, you know. Everyone's got some really fancy nicknames or something that means to them, but never have I ever actually come across someone whose nickname rolls off the tongue so well. So I want to start with, how did you get the nickname Action?
When I first started boxing, he was my first coach, other than my then when I went over and trained with my dad and everything like that. And he always used to say, I'd jump in the ring, Action, let's go. And it's just, it rolls off, like, you know, they've got, you know, Action Jackson's like some old movie or something like that. So it just used to roll off the tongue for him. And then when I met my coach, who I'm with now, Jay, when we were looking to have my first pro fight, he always used to say it as well. And then he goes, oh, what do you want your alias to be? And I said, well, just put it as Action, you know, like, because, and I look at it on a good point of view from the way I fight as well, like what I do in that ring and how I present myself, I bring that entertainment, I bring that action to it. So it kind of suits in a way. So I'm actually quite glad that it's the way it is.
Yeah. So you told me your first coach was Jay. How did you two meet?
So we met through, because I had a coach, that first coach I had in Mandra, his name was Ed. And then his name was Ed. And then I went up to, I was in Mandra, and then we got asked to go for a sparring day. Like, so a lot of combat sports, they have open sparring and stuff. So a lot of gyms come together to one gym and they all spar each other. And we got asked to go up to Onyx, where my current coach, Jay, he had his gym. And he had a couple of other pros underneath him at the time. This was going back maybe 4 or 5 years ago now, maybe almost five years ago now. And around that time, he had a couple of pros underneath him. So we were like, okay, we're going to go spar, move around some professionals and stuff. So we went there and I met Jay, and me and him hit it off straight away. And then I sparred the two top pros he had underneath him at the time. One of them was like 4-0. The other one was, I think, 6-1 or something. And they were pretty up there in their divisions. They were a bit heavier than me as well. I think one of them was fighting at about, I think he was fighting at lightweight to welter. And the other was fighting at lightweight and then also dropped down to super feather. So I used to drop in between. So, and I sparred them both, and I did really, really well. They both boxed really, really well. I got to have the chance later on in that time to spar him more and more often, but me and Jay hit it off from there. And he actually asked if I could come and do some more sparring frequently, because he liked the work I did and he liked that I gave them both trouble as well. He saw a lot in me. And then with that coach I had in Mandra, it wasn't maybe a month later, me and that coach in Mandra, we kind of cut ties and we went our own separate ways. And first person I thought of to go to was Jay. I just, the first thing I said to my parents was, let's go to Jay, start training with him. So then that's when I made that transition from driving from Mandra to Coburn almost every day.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I remember when we met, you told me that you live in Mandra, and now I live all the way north of the river. So it's definitely a bit of a drive. Now, I know you told me you didn't always live in Mandra. You were born over east. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I was born and I brought up a lot of my like younger life in Western Sydney, so in Penrith. Mm-hmm. And around that sort of time there, you know, like I'm really, really grateful to be here in Perth, you know, because I definitely know for a fact that from my perspective, if I was to stay there and I never moved over here in the first place, I wouldn't have achieved what I've done now, you know, in a boxing sense, you know, because a lot of my good friends and a lot of the people I know over there, we're all running amok. They're all, you know, some of them are actually in prison now and they're all doing their own thing, you know. So I'm actually quite glad that I'm here now And I did go back. Like, well, I moved over here when I was about 11 or 12. And I was with my stepdad, my mum, and my sister. And then when I was about 17, 18, I moved back. And I was there for about 4 or 5 months. And I was living there with my old man. I was living there with my dad and hanging out. And I was meant to turn pro over there. But just having lack of resources, not the real, not a good backing and not a good... not a good figure behind me to be able to help me to progress into doing that. So I just made the decision. I said, look, I'm going to go back to Perth. So I pretty much just packed back up. I come back here by myself. And then I said to Jay, when I come back and started training with Jay again, I said, listen, we'll put it out there for my first profile. We'll turn pro, we'll work towards it. And then it wasn't until I was a year later when I turned 19 where.
Wow. So turn pro at 19. That's really impressive. So what was the point in your life when you, I remember you told me you used to do a whole bunch of jobs back when you were growing up. I mean, told you you worked in concreting and then you worked a lot more, worked a lot in labor. So how old were you, or was there a point in your life where you told yourself, you know what, full time, I'm going to pursue this full time. Was there like a moment or an age you can give me that when that happened?
It was really young. I was actually, I tell a lot of people this story as well. It was my stepdad. Cause when I left school and I was like working, I was doing everything, you know, like I had to be an apprentice. I wasn't even an apprentice for people, but I tried painting. I then went to Sydney and I was doing a lot of concreting. I did some concreting here in Perth, did some plastering. I have no idea how to plaster, but I ended up having to give it a shot. I did so many different things, and it was actually years before that. It was when I was younger, when I was still in high school, and my stepdad said to me, you know, like, what do you want to do? And I went on like some sort of school camp or something like that. I was away for a bit, and I would have been like maybe 14, 15 at the time. And
you still there? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Oh, apologies, man. I lost you there for a second. Yeah, connection's a little bit unstable.
No, that's right.
So, where were we? Okay, so 15 years old, school camp, and what happened then?
Yeah. No, okay. So, yeah, he's before I left, he said to me, what do I want to do? You know, because I love performing, I love dance, I love music, I love all these different things, but always had that really deep love for fighting. And on my dad's side, they all fought professionally themselves. So I always had that real deep passion for combat sports and for fighting. And I love everything to do with boxing and fighting. And so I went to that camp, I come back and I made the decision to box. So then I started fighting the amateurs and working my way through there. And then it wasn't until I left school and had my time, like back in going to Sydney, and I was there living with my dad and I was working constantly. He didn't have a license, so I was driving him around everywhere. And I realized that, hey, I'm not going to be able to achieve what I want here without some good support and backing behind me to help me out. And I knew that I could get that here in Perth instead of over there, because in Sydney it's like a rat race, especially in the western suburbs as well. Like everyone's just constantly at work and everyone's just trying to do everything they can to pursue what they're doing. So it makes it hard on that point, but at the same time I understand it as well. So I made a decision to come back, and that's where I really just said to myself, I said, look, I don't want to work a normal job. I don't want to do a labor in. I don't want to go to work. I don't want to do all that stuff. I want to pursue this career because you've only got one shot in your life. So, you know, and I love this sport that much that I want to just give it all I can. And then when I know that I'm at my end and that I can't do it anymore, then at the end of that, I'd love to even own a boxing gym, because the knowledge I've learned through all these other coaches and all these different things we've been around Australia as well, it'd be good to be able to show that to people. And I do that now anyways, like training people, like, you know, at the back of the house or down places and at different gyms and stuff as well. But while I'm in my prime now, being, you know, young and already doing what I've been doing so far, I want to, you know, obviously the aim of boxing is to become a world champion or to pursue that top level. And you look at all the people in Australian boxing who have done that, from they've come from nothing to all of a sudden they win a world title and they're something, you know, it's good, you know, but at the same time, everyone's got their own different perspectives on it and what they want to do in that sort of limelight or in that work, you know. And I just want to do the best for not just myself, but for all the people that are in around me as well, and like in that journey with me as well.
That's phenomenal, man. Now I wanted to ask about your amateur years. How old were you when you first had your first amateur fight?
Going back now, I reckon I got chucked in there pretty early because the coach I had down in Mandurah, Ed, he's a phenomenal guy as well. He's awesome, really, really good. And me and him are still really good friends as well. He chucked me in there. I think it would have been maybe 14 or 15. And that was after, I think that was a couple of months after I first started training properly because I had knowledge of fighting and boxing and everything like that. But when I first really started, it was around 14. So I reckon.
Wow, wait. So you first started training when you were 14, 15, and then what, you had a fight within the first year of your training? Wow, holy crap. So what was that like? What was that like walking into your first fight?
It was very, it felt very, in a weird sense, comfortable, but that nervous feeling, like I try to explain to people sometimes, and like being in that limelight or being surrounded by people who have either fought or they used to fight or they're currently fighting or people who just love that sort of scenario. It's a very daunting experience. Like you get people who are very scared in that sort of limelight and they get very nervous, get everything like that. I felt quite comfortable, but how I explained to people is like, it's almost like jumping in the WWE ring and the cage goes on top of you. As soon as you step in, it's almost like there's a big cage around you and that no one, you can't escape. The only way you can escape is if you try and jump off somewhere and run away or anything like that. But that's honestly how I felt. As soon as I stepped one foot in there, all I could see was just people around me. And it almost felt like I was trapped. I was like, I can't go anywhere. I've got to be here now. That's obviously my perspective on it. But after getting past that first fight and seeing how daunting that really is, you learn to love it. And like that's really the only time I've ever felt nervous in a situation. Like, trust me, that's a lot scarier than anyone can say, they had a fight on the street or anything. Like, because on the street, anything can happen. But being in a ring, whether it be an octagon, a bloody boxing ring, or a stadium or anything like that, that will be a lot more frightening to anybody, any human being, than going out, you know, with a couple of mates to a pub and getting into a fight out there.
Man, that's crazy. 15, that's pretty impressive for 15 years old. I can't really think of many 15-year-olds are probably starting at that young or getting involved straight away.
What's quite interesting is that a lot of the boxing circuit around here, you get kids that are like 10 years old jumping in there.
Wow. Like, okay.
They jump in when they're 10 years old, and you watch them go in it, and it's actually really cool to see.
That's awesome. So fast forward to today. Now, you got a big fight coming up on February the 26th, correct? Yes. Now, what can you tell me about the preparation going into this fight? Because last year we just had COVID, and I remember you telling me you had a fight last year. What month was it again? In July? March.
March? That was the last fight I had.
Yeah.
So between March and this upcoming fight, what's changed the most for you?
It would be obviously COVID, because in that space of with COVID happening, like I just come off a really good win and I ended up being put into the WBC ratings. I ended up getting put into the top 40 in the WBC in the world. So having that after winning the prestigious belt that I won as well, I was pretty grateful for that. But all through COVID, it was just me training at the back of the house and pretty much smashing myself the whole time waiting for something to happen. Cause obviously through that lockdown, you couldn't go anywhere, couldn't do anything. And, I had my partner and we'll at her mum's place, we're staying there and we'll just doing our thing there. And once we got out of lockdown, we were obviously hearing about fights, like, okay, we just got put in top 40. Where's this option? Where's that option? And even before lockdown happened, I got offered a fight with a guy in Sydney and it was going to be on mutual ground in Brisbane. Okay. And there was talks of it and then it went dead. And then all of a sudden that week we went into lockdown and then my coach had to close his doors for his gym. We had to do all that sort of stuff. And we're still waiting. And then in that space of lockdown, I was smashing myself and constantly just waiting to hear back about something. And then once we got out of lockdown, I heard that we could possibly be fighting in, where was it? It was a fight that was going to be local here in Perth that my promoter was trying to make happen, like the local Thunderdome shows. And he was trying to get a show happening. And we offered a guy who also fought two of my other teammates and both my teammates beat him. And they said, okay, well, we're looking for local opponents, looking for something to happen. Do you want to fight Jackson? And he said no. I think he said no 3 or 4 times. And okay. They even offered him, from what I was told, they offered him $5,000. The last offer was $5,000 to take the fight with me so they can have some fights on. And he said no again. He said no again that he didn't want to fight. And that it was that he didn't want to take the risk. And they said to him, and they actually said, like, why won't you take the fight? Like, it's $5,000. Like, if anyone, like, I even said to my promoter, I said, give me $5,000. Like, in this COVID time, you're looking for money. Like, I'll probably take $5,000 for nothing. And he said he's weighing a bit heavy. He hasn't been training, everything like that. And that's on him. That's not on me. Yeah. But I told my promoter, and I even told my coach, I said, listen, if he walks in 5 to 10 kilos heavier on the night or the fight, or even on the weigh-in, if he weighs in 7, 8 kilos heavier or above.
Wow. And then what happened? Do you still say no?
No.
And he still said no. He still said no, which was a shame. But that was the first one we got turned down for. And then the second one after that, my promoter was trying to get us an opportunity to fight in Mexico. And it was going to be for the title that they were trying to get on, because he's not too bad. He actually stalked me on Instagram after the fight was obviously put towards him and stuff. And he hasn't had as many fights as me. But he's been very looked after. Like, he's not a prodigy over there, but he boxes pretty well. He's not too bad. Mm-hmm. But it was going to be for the WBA Interim Oceania title or something like that. It was going to be for a international title, similar to the WBC that I won. It's just a different sanctioning body. And from that, he was stalking me on Instagram. It was going to be all ahead. We actually planned to go, that the plan was to go to Vancouver because from what I'm not mistaken, Dana White's just opened his gym or something like that in Vancouver, or like it's reopened or something. And we were actually, my coach has got business associates that live in Vancouver. So we were going to fly there and quarantine as well as train at that new facility and then go to Mexico from there. And it was all in prep and planned. It was going to be me and one of the other boys I trained with. We were both potentially going to go over there, and then 5 days went by, and then apparently they said no. The Mexican fellow over there said no, I don't want to fight, or I don't want to take that risk or something like that. So then that was put down. So we were bummed out about that. And then there was obviously two more other fights that we got offered for. The guy there was offered a fight again in Brisbane or Sydney, and he wanted something stupid. Like, he wanted I think he was expecting like $50,000 for a fight or something like that, which, you know, from what one probably, but even from that, he said he wanted that sort of money from that. And then we were like, okay, well, we don't really have that, whatever. It was talk. And then he said, oh, I don't want to, I can't fight because I can't, I've got no budget. I can't put it towards it for us to go to Brisbane or Sydney or something like that. But I know that that's a lie, because he's just opened his own law firm in Sydney. That's like a 20-story building. So He definitely is not saying he doesn't have money, because he does. So that was put down. And then the last one that I got turned down for was actually on the last Jim Zhu fight night that was over in Sydney, that he fought. I forgot who he fought. But it was a big Australian card that they had over there. Dreamtime Promotions helped promote it. It was Matt Rose, who runs the whole No Limits Boxing promotion over there as well, and manages and promotes Tim Zhu himself. And I got offered to fight. He's one of Australia's best guys, or best guys in the division. His name's Luke Jackson. And he's also got the A-list Action as well. So he's Luke Action Jackson. Yeah, so we've been trying to get that fight happening for ages. Like, we offered to fight him a year ago, or no, actually, maybe two, like a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And he said no. He said no, it was in talks and all that sort of stuff. And then we got offered the fight for that fight show. And we were like, yep, done deal, we'll do it. And then he ended up taking a fight with a guy named Tyson Lantry as well instead. And Tyson Lantry is a good boxer. He boxed as well, but he hasn't got the best win ratio. Like, he's not looked mm-hmm. upon as like a dangerous fighter. So in my eyes, I think Luke took him as an easy win, or they took him as like, oh, we'll prep him in there, because Luke Jackson, he fought Carl Frampton over in Ireland for the world titles and stuff. Like, he fought him for, you know, a shot at a world title, and he ended up losing, but he still went there and he went against one of the world's best. and he come across short, but he did really well. He went over there and he fought well, and then come back and then fought someone like Tyson Lantry. I think he's ranked 670th in the world.
Oh. Do you know where you're ranked?
Very big difference. I'm in, obviously, in the 40th in the WBC, but I think in the world rated, I think I'm in the 80s or 90s.
Wow.
Overall at the minute. It could be different. I don't really know. I haven't looked. But from that, he took Tyson Lantry, and Tyson Lantry boxed as well. And they fought, and they had a good back and forth fight. I didn't get a chance to watch it. I missed it. But Luke Jackson lost. And I was quite shocked on that. He lost against a guy who he was supposedly meant to walk over. And it surprised me. I was like, okay, well, we were trying to make the fight happen with Luke Jackson, and he fought someone else instead when we got offered the fight. And we said yes. But he said no to me and took on someone else and ended up losing. So we were a little bit shocked on that. We're like, wow, okay, so where do we go from here? So that's really pretty much – boxing is a very particularly political sport. Like, it's very – The politics in boxing is actually quite silly, because there's so much that goes on behind closed doors, but then there's so much political stuff on this person trains with them, or this person's got this much backing and everything like that. So it's a lot of, word of mouth say, like someone say this, but then it's not true, or someone says this and then it is true. And, oh, there's works done behind closed doors, but we don't actually know until it's there. So like it's very hard to know really what's going on.
Mm. Well, politics aside, let's talk about your record now. You got a big fight coming up. That's another feather in your cap. When was your first ever pro fight, and were you always fighting with Thunderdome? I know you've fought with a couple of other promotions, but who was your first professional fight with?
First professional fight was under Thunderdome. It was because Thunderdome is the local shows they have here, and the promotion behind that is Dragonfire Boxing.
Mm-hmm.
And who I'm signed under is a man named Tony Tolge, and he helped promote Danny Green, and he promotes a handful of fighters. So I've met Danny a few times, and Danny's such a nice guy. He's awesome. And then my promoter as well, since he's worked with so many different fighters, like he's worked with Kostya Zhu, he's worked with Vic Darchinian, he's worked with Danny Green, and he's worked with so many fighters around the world, and he does really, really well. He's actually got both those, Jason and Andrew Maloney, signed underneath him, and Andrew was the world champion, and Jason fought Inoue recently as well. So they've gone over to Las Vegas and fought on Top Rank Boxing and everything like that. So he's definitely, he knows what he's doing, and he's a really good promoter, and he does really well for us as well. But even on that sense, I had my first fight with them, and that was on the 5th of May 2017, from what I know, because I've got it on me, tattooed on me as well.
Oh, wow. Nice. You got your first ever pro fight tattooed. That's awesome. That's awesome, man. Now...
Yeah, I got it on me. Yeah.
Awesome. Now, when you're always fighting, the way in which you perform at on the day, weighing in, is at featherweight and super featherweight. Now, because you've been fighting for both in amateurs and professionals, so you're 23 now, aren't you? Yep. And you started when you're around 14, 15. So that's about 7, 8 years. And were you always fighting at featherweight and super featherweight, or did you ever compete in other weight categories?
No, so in the amateurs, it's the divisions are a little bit different. Like, so from a professional point of view, the divisions make a lot more sense, where in the amateurs, they're a little bit different. It's very different. So looking at the UFC as well, so the UFC weight divisions are very different to the boxing weight division. So, like, they've got their own sort of say in divisions. So, like, a featherweight, from what I don't really know, but for featherweight in UFC is heavier than...
It's heavier than what it is, yeah. Because in boxing, I believe featherweight's what, 57? Roughly 57? Yeah.
So from boxing, featherweight is 57.2 kilos.
Yeah. I think in the UFC, it's just above that. I think it weights, I think it's 60, I think it's 58, I think it's 59, roughly. I might need to fact check that one because the featherweight, it's 63, actually, because the featherweight division is probably one of the most, like, stacked divisions, but it's just another word for it, because the reason why they have it is because in boxing, we got what is it, light, then just a regular, and then we got super. But with UFC, it's just lightweight, featherweight, middleweight. We got light heavyweight, but that's usually it. So between in boxing, from your standpoint, between featherweight and super featherweight, what's the difference in terms of kilos?
The difference, honestly, is feather being 57.2 and then pretty much super featherweight being 58.9. So it's pretty much 59 kilos on the dot. Mm-hmm. Where that's pretty much the difference there. But in feeling, like myself, like I'm obviously not the biggest guy. Like I fight a feather or super feather. But what I find is when I get in there with guys that are feather or super feather, whether they be taller or shorter, I'm normally the more...
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Oh, geez, man. Sorry, apologies about that. I have the connection here at the house. But just writing down those, as you were saying, now when you find a super feather, you were just saying that you fought guys who are bigger and shorter than you. Continue on from there.
Yeah. So what I'm saying that, so you got to look at it from a point of view where you feel comfortable. There's a lot of guys who fight in certain divisions and they either look like they should be in that division or they look like they should either be heavier or smaller. And what I found was in the amateurs, like there's fights I took at, like when I first had my first professional amateur fights, I fought at my lightest, which was like, because I wasn't any bigger, I was only 15. I fought at 54 kilos.
Okay.
Which is tiny, 54, like it was tiny compared to now. And 54, I won my state title and a golden glove title. Wait, hold on. I won state title at 54 kilos in the amateurs. And then I won a golden glove title at 57.
Okay.
And then there was a few times in the amateurs where I fought at 60 and 62. So that was around that sort of time where, okay, well, if I've gone from 54 to 57 and then all of a sudden I go to 60, 62, you're able to move around with that sort of part. So I think my last fight I had in the amateurs before I turned pro was at 61. So I was kind of like in the middle from 62 to 60. So I fought at 61. And for some reason, my body must have had some sort of weird, like, part of me that didn't want to cut weight or put on weight. Like, I stayed. I remember on the day of the weigh-in, my body just wouldn't lose fluid. So I remember I jumped in the sauna, like, on the day of the weigh-in. I wasn't necessarily trying to cut weight. It was just like, okay, you got to be 61 on point. But for some reason, my body would not go from 62 down. It just would. It was just refusing that. What that 1 kilo just to come off my body was a struggle. So I didn't feel bad or anything like that. I thought it was really weird. And then I got to the weigh-in and I was like 61.1, so like 100 grams. And they were okay with it, so it was okay. But what I found with my body evolving and how I am getting older and stuff, like being able to maintain how I'm feeling now and how strong I am and with weight in general, I usually cut maybe 3.5 to 4 kilos, whether it be at feather or super feather. And I walk around about 61, 62 kilos now. I walk around at that, where before I was walking around at like 63, 64, where I felt lethargic. I felt a bit sluggish and everything like that. And then I'd have to cut down even more. And I felt silly to have to cut that much down. But since the intense training I do all through this time, and I know that naturally feather and super feather are good weights for me. But I know that if I was to fight at lightweight, which is what, 61.2 kilos, or super lightweight, which is 63, I know I can, because I know myself, I'm confident in my strength and in my ability to be able to perform with those weights as well. But a lot of my fights are at feather and super feather. And when I do fight at them weights, I do feel like the naturally stronger guy. And it shows as well in my fights that when they do throw certain shots, and if I do choose to stand there and be there, I don't feel like I go anywhere. I don't feel like they can harm me in any sort of way. But I spar guys that are 85 kilos,
wow,
like most of the time as well. Like I spar big boys and move around
those guys. So what was it like sparring those guys then at like 85? Is there like
it's definitely a difference, because you see in natural stature them being bigger. Like, you know, you spar guys at like 75 or 80, 85 or anything like that, or even spar people at 90 kilos. There's a guy that I train with named Donato, and I think you might have met him as well. And he's a bloody he's a beast of a human. He fights at cruiserweight, which is 91, but he walks around just under 100 kilos. Oh. But I've got to spar him.
Oh, God. So, I was going to say, he's still upcoming, isn't he? Is he still fighting in the amateurs, or is he turned pro now?
No, no, he's turned pro. He had one pro fight last year when I fought as well. Oh, yeah, he had his first pro fight. Yeah, first pro fight in March when I fought, and he obliterated the guy in front of him. But I've got to move around with him. And moving around with someone like him, you feel, especially someone with him who's got so much talent and so gifted in being that size, because a lot of guys his size can't move and do things like him. Like, he's just a gifted guy. Like, he moves like a lightweight. He punches like a heavyweight. And he's just a gifted guy. So being able to move around with him, you got to see the difference in that. But there's a lot of guys who don't know how to use their weight. Like, there's guys that I've sparred that are like 85 kilos and they're sluggish, they're slow. And give it to them, they might have a bit of bang behind their punch, but if they can't get the punch off, it's a different story. But even being hit, I think the hardest punch I've ever been hit by was a guy who was a light heavyweight, and he was an 87 kilos at the time, and he fought at light heavyweight. And he hit me with a right hand, and it knocked my head back, but it didn't go anywhere. But I remember even my coach Jay, he was like, fuck, that was a flush shot. And I make it sure that I don't get hit that much. But he hit me with a flush right hand, and I didn't go anywhere. I didn't get wobbled. Touch wood, I've never been wobbled. I've never been hurt. I've never been stopped. I've done hundreds and hundreds of rounds with people. And being hit by him, that was probably the hardest right hand I ever took. But for me, I didn't go anywhere. I was like, okay, I wore that really well. And it was flush. It was right in the middle of the face. Like, if anything, if I stepped any more into it, it probably would have broken my nose. But that was going back maybe a couple of years ago now, and feeling that, knowing that you've got in combat sports, you've got to be able to take punches, because if you can't, you're going to have a very, very short career.
What benefit do you get from sparring these heavier guys?
The benefit really is being able to move around guys that size. If you're pushing around a guy, like, I look at it from my perspective, because even when I was 15, I was always sparring guys heavier than me, because there aren't a lot of smaller guys around. But even when I was 15, I was sparring guys that were 10, 15 kilos heavier. And what I find now in my development, obviously from what my coach Jay does with us as well, sparring heavier guys, especially being smaller, if I'm able to impose my will and my power and explosiveness and speed and all my boxing attributes against someone heavier, and they've got no answers, and then I've putting people down like that, like 85 kilos, hitting someone with a good shot and hurting them, or putting them down for body punch or putting them down for punch, it shows how much explosive power I've got, and it shows that someone that size can't impose their will on me how they would if someone doesn't know how to use that. That's where it comes back to knowing how to use your weight. If you've got someone that size who can use their weight and they can box really well, it's harder. But you've got people who don't really know how to utilize their weight and their explosiveness and their power and their size, they struggle. And that's where I find I get the upper hand in, because I know how to use their size against them, knowing that I'm strong enough to be able to muscle up with them and be able to hurt them as well. Because a lot of people take that look at me and, you know, I'm not a very big guy, but I think a big thing with knowing how explosive I am in not just my strength in body, but in punching power and also boxing skill, because at the end of the day, you can have all the power in the world, but if you've got no boxing skill, it's not going to help you out at all.
That's awesome, man. So let's talk. So let's talk about what happens on fight day now, because we're literally just over a month out to go. And so when you go, because you've got quite a fair bit of experience now fighting in the pros, when it comes fight day, do you have like a routine or something that you follow to help you get your mind get into the correct position or correct shape for the fight?
Mainly, I'm cruisy. I'm a really cruisy person. A lot of people have different rituals and different things they do. I think the only thing I like to do on fight day is obviously the weigh-in that night. We go have some food afterwards, but then that morning I wake up and I go have a massive breakfast. I go. I don't care who's there with me. I go have a massive breakfast. I smash down heaps of food. And then for the day, honestly, I just chill out. Towards the afternoon, I'll start getting things ready. Mm-hmm. And I'll start like packing my stuff, what I need for the fight, packing my bag, like my outfit, everything like that. But when I was in Mandurah, I used to actually catch the train from Mandurah to Coburn, and I used to just sit there and listen to music, and I'd be have all my bag with me and dressed up and everything like that, and I'd catch the train from Mandurah to Coburn, get my coach or someone to pick me up from Coburn train station, then we'd go to the gym and then hang out at the gym for a bit. And then when it was time to go to the venue, we'd go to the venue and just go there. And then the process of even being there in the dressing room, it's just being able to be calm, you know. Everybody's different, but I'm obviously big in music. So I play music, I dance in the dressing room, I have a bit of a laugh and everything like that. But then when it's obviously time for me to get ready, I keep that music going. I like that vibe. I like that fun, that being able to be relaxed but also have a good time. But there's also that seriousness in what needs to be done and what we're there for. So then obviously I dance around. I do some shadow. I do pads. I do everything like that. But it's in a serious note. But I've got to have that music playing. Like, you know, like if the music wasn't there, I'm happy without it. But I love to have that music there and be able to dance and hear that music. And it's a lot of older stuff as well, you know, like old 80s and 90s R&B and hip hop and stuff like that. It's just what helps me.
Mm. So what kind of like 80s and 90s R&B, like is there like a certain song you play always over and over again, or is it just a bunch of tracks, or how does it work?
Really, it's just just a bunch of different stuff, you know, like a lot of sometimes I even go old, I'll bloody play Elvis Presley in the dressing room. I don't really, you know, like I'm big on music, you know, you know that yourself, like being around me and stuff, like I'm all into the older stuff. So
yeah,
I'll get a lot of Bobby Brown, Michael Jackson, obviously Michael Jackson, you don't know that. Prince, George Michael, heaps of them. Obviously you gotta get other ones in there, like Tupac and like B.I.G. and like everything like that. But like, it's a lot of the older stuff, like a lot of stuff that not a lot of people listen to and stuff. And that's just from the upbringing that I've had with my family, like that sort of stuff, like big Michael Jackson and Bobby Brown and like all that sort of stuff, like all that real older hip hop sort of stuff before I come into like the 90s and everything like that. But yeah, it's honestly, like that's what gets me in that mood to like, hey, we're going out to perform. We're going, like, because in that sense, boxing is another way of performing.
Okay. And what makes you say that?
It's the atmosphere, you know, like going to the fights, like you've come and watched, like you've been there watching the fights and stuff. Like
I'm not gonna lie, man, like when you're there, when you're in that arena and then you're watching everything that's going on around you, you know, you're watching all the people come out, the ring cart, you know, the ring cart girls walking around, then you got the sponsors, we got the ads. I feel like the boxing obviously is a huge chunk of it, but underneath you've got all these little things that add up to it. And I feel like that's what makes Thunderdome such a big, makes Thunderdome such a big, like, atmosphere. Like, the atmosphere is tense. Like, I'm watching around, you know. Last time when I was there, you had all your crew in the white shirts. I mean, you got a terrific fan base. I mean, we had all those people standing in two lines as you walk down. How much of that, like, has an effect on you, you know what I mean? Massively, yeah.
Yeah, without the support I've got behind me, you know, like I've got the support from, you know, like I've got the support from the people in that crowd. I've got, most importantly, I've got the support from, you know, my partner. I've got the support from my family. I've got the support from my cousins, my friends, yourself. I've got all these people there that even on my first profile, like coming out there and seeing these people, like obviously they got the two lines when I'm walking out, you know, like it's almost like it is a big deal to that, where I'm just doing I'm going out there doing what I love to do. Mm-hmm. And seeing all these people around me, like yourself and like, you know, my partner, my family, all these friends, people like that, get so involved with my journey and with the stuff that I'm doing as well. It's honestly the best thing ever, because as I'm walking out there, obviously I'm focused, I'm in that zone, but it's just a really cool experience to see. Even after the fight, you get, like after my first pro fight, I obviously had people there cheering and happy for me and everything like that, but I had like five or six people come up to me after my first pro fight and they were, you know, I never met him before in my life, and they were just really happy to meet me and talk to me and said how well I fought and that, you know, they definitely want to come watch me next time and everything like that. And like little things like that, it makes you feel good. It's like, wow, you know, like I've gone out there doing what I love to do, but I'm also making someone else happy, because they obviously, it's entertainment. They're there to watch something and see something that they've never seen before or something that they enjoy watching. You got to be eye catching. And especially in a professional sport like that, whether it be basketball, soccer, boxing, UFC, all that sort of stuff, you've got to be eye-catching, you've got to be interesting. You get so many names out there that do fight or they do something and they just don't have that X factor, or they don't put enough in to showcase themselves. Mm-hmm. And they never go anywhere. It's a shame, because everyone puts so much hard work in, but if they don't find that little bit of passion and that little bit of pizzazz about themselves, or and they can't showcase it right, that it's hard for people to get behind them, because they don't know what's going on. They don't know where they're going or what's happening with them. Where I'm very grateful in the fact that I'm grateful on all the support I've got, but then at the same time, people who I don't know who come up and they enjoy watching me fight as well. It's a humbling thing to have as well, because they're enjoying it just as much as I am.
Awesome, man. Now, I'm actually glad you kind of brought that stuff up about showcasing yourself and like having like a cult of personality behind what you're doing. So obviously, like, skill aside, what are some of the things you like to do to like promote yourself? Now, what I remember from last time, I mean, don't get me wrong, but when you came out last time, one thing you looked really well is that you actually love to, well, what's the best way to put it? You love to like put out your image. That's one thing. You know, whenever you always like out there, you know, you're always wearing the flashy shorts, or sometimes I see you've had a spray tan, you get the haircut. Is this all part of like this image that you're trying to promote to the public?
No, it's more of a thing for myself, you know, because okay. I, in that sort of sense, you got to think of in that performance sense, you want to look good for not just yourself, but also in that sort of thing, you know, you're out there to perform and to showcase and do and put yourself out there. So I showcase myself enough through the way I fight, but also I enjoy looking nice myself. And even in what I wear, like, you know, like I'm big on crushed velvet. There's a lot of people around me. I'm not going to name names, but I know one, and one that doesn't like. I know one that doesn't like the crushed velvet. She's probably laughing now. But I love it. It's a big thing for me. And the reason behind the flash shorts and like that sort of get up and stuff is because crushed velvet itself, my first ever pro fight shorts I wore were actually my dad's, and his mum made them. And the story behind those shorts where they were crushed velvet as well. I wore them for my first two pro fights, and I've still got them now. I've actually got them in a bag now. I wore them for my first. Yeah, still got them. So my dad gave me them. My dad gave me them to wear for my. Obviously, he said have them. He gave me a pair of gloves that he fought in as well, and like I've got all this memorabilia and stuff of the family. But I fought in them for my first two pro fights because I wanted to pay a respect to him. And to my on that side of the family as well, and they were crushed velvet. And the story that he tells me is that an old fighter, you probably heard of him, Marvin Hagler. Marvin Hagler he fought Sugar Ray Leonard, he fought Thomas Hearns. He was part of the Fab Four with like those guys back in the 80s. And he used to come out in crushed velvet shorts, and it was a big thing back then when he was doing it, because everyone knew Marvin Hagler would come out in crushed velvet shorts, whatever color it was. So that style from that 80s crushed velvet feel, I try and bring that old feel back into a sense, but also I like crushed velvet. That's just me. I think it looks
flashy,
cool.
You know what I mean? It's nothing wrong with that. Can you hear us right now?
No, but that it is, you know, like, but even in that sort of sense, like, I look back on the fights I've had, and I've got, you know, like all these different outfits and everything like that. And you do, like, you look at some of the best fighters in the world at that top tier level, and you do have to sell yourself in a way, because if you're not, like I said, nobody's really going to get eye-opening. Like, you look at some of the best fighters in the world. One of the best guys that even we had a conversation before about, Ryan Garcia.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got such a big fan base and such a big following on social media. And you look at the things he does and things he says and the things he, all these sort of things, and it's made him go bang, massive, you know? But in that sense, does it work for him? 100% it does. Me, on a point of view, that's, I'm not a big fan of that sort of thing. I'm not much of a talker. I'm not much of a big mouth or anything like that. You know, I keep to myself. I let my fighting do the talking. But in that sense, it's worked for him. And look where he is now. He's at that top tier level of fighting. He come away with a really good win, and he knows how to sell himself. And that's all from knowing the social media platforms as well. So it works best in both ways, I guess.
Awesome. All right, Bab. That's unfortunately, that's all I got a time for, because I got to head back to work right now. But
should be down for a second. Don't worry, we're almost finishing up. Can you hear me?
Windy.
Hello.
Yep.
Can you hear me? Okay. All right. So we're just finishing up right now. I just want to ask one more question for you, man. Now, First of all, I want to say thank you so much for taking time to do the podcast. It's obviously been a long time in the making. But now, you've got your big fight on February 26th. Is there anyone or anything you want to give a shout-out to? Anyone or any sponsors or any people in general, just before we clear this up?
I don't have a list. I'd love to give big shout-out to not just, you know, my partner who deals with me training, you know, day in and day out. You know, it's pretty full-on because I'm training morning, night, day and night, and it's a lot to work around with, and she's an absolute champion, and I love her to absolute bits. My family, you know, especially my coach. My coach puts in a lot of hard work towards our team, and he had to close his gym down, so now he's doing it all over his house. So big shout out to him, and a big shout out to obviously all the sponsors I've got behind me. I don't have a list to read them all off, but they're all there, and big thank you to them as well.
Awesome. Thanks so much, man. Now just do me a favor. Is there any chance I can just grab a couple of tickets off you just before for your next fight? Are there any available left? Awesome. Now, for the people... Oh my.
1 second. Yeah.
Awesome. I was going to say, that's good. Save us a couple for me and, of course, for my buddy Jack. Now, all the people who want to buy tickets to your fight, where can they buy them from?
They can just contact me on any of my social media paths. They usually sell them from Ticketek on their website, which is Dragonfly Boxing or Thunderdome. But I find it easier that people can contact me. Once I get hard copy tickets, they can contact me. I'll send them out myself, or I'll even go drop them off, and I'll just I'll give the tickets out that way.
Lovely. All right. Thanks so much for coming on, guys. One more time, Action Jackson. I'll see you soon, buddy. All the best.